This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to broadcast live from the Inner City Blues Festival, Saturday, April 13th, from 7 to 10 p.m. Healthcare for All Oregon is throwing a party called the Inner City Blues Festival, Healing the Healthcare Blues, in the Groove of Love. Northwest Blues Stars are returning for a night of music that will benefit the work of the statewide coalition Healthcare for All Oregon for universal, affordable healthcare for all Oregonians. KBOO is proud to help sponsor the Inner City Blues Festival to take place Saturday, April 13th at the Melody Ballroom, 615 Southeast Alder. Doors at 6 and KBOO's live broadcast starts at 7. More information can be found at kboo.fm/innercitybluesfestival2013.
Thanks for listening to APA Compass. My name is Andrew Ye, and it's my pleasure today to be speaking with Dr. Anne Wetherill, who is an adjunct professor of art history at Portland State University. Dr. Wetherill and Jim Carman are co-curators of the exhibit Flying Tigers, Chinese-American Aviators in Oregon, 1918 to 1945. The Flying Tigers exhibit has three parts: the history of aviation in Oregon, the stories of several Chinese-American aviators from Portland, both men and women, and a beautiful timeline, which places aviation and the Chinese-American story into the larger historical context. And when many of us think of the early history of aviation, we remember the Wright brothers' flight in 1903, and not much else. How does Oregon fit into this early aviation history?
In the early 1900s, Oregon became very interested in aviation, especially during the Lewis and Clark Exposition of 1905 or 1907 here in Portland, because Lincoln Beachey flew his dirigible Gelatine over through Swan Island and then over to Vancouver, and people were just absolutely captivated with aviation. Portland describes itself as being aeronutty. people like Julius Meyer and then Henry Wemmy, who was the town Wemmy is named for. Henry Wemmy had the first motor car in Oregon, and he was determined to have the first airplane in Oregon. So what we have are these early 20th century businessmen that see the commercial potential of aviation in Oregon, in the Portland area. And so they're bankrolling these builders and these engineers. How this includes China, or how the Chinese become involved in this, is that in 1906, Moy Bak-hin, who was a Portland businessman, becomes the Chinese consul for the entire Northwest. And as we have the last dynasty, Qing Dynasty, fell in 1911, the republic that was born then really perceived aviation as the key to a modern future. And so the Chinese Republic was recruiting Chinese-American pilots heavily to send them back to China to found flight schools and manufacturing plants for any kind of aircraft.
How did the Flying Tigers exhibit come about? And where did the initial idea come from? And who really drove the project?
I had a chance conversation with a man named Keith Lee a couple of years ago. He came up to me and he said, "Have you ever thought about doing anything on the Flying Tigers?" And I was thinking, well, tell me more. I don't know anything about this. His father was one of just a handful, 8 or 10 Chinese, that went back to China as a member of the original American volunteer group. His dad came over as a paper inducted into the U.S. Hall of Fame.
What did you expect when you first envisioned this project, and how did it actually turn out?
I wasn't really sure how I was going to envision the project. It was much richer than I thought it would turn out. But one of the questions that I kept coming back to in reading about the Chinese that were involved, knowing that there were other Chinese communities around that also were involved in aviation, and I kept coming back to, why Portland? Why would this have happened here? I was really struck by the fact that Portland was so interested in promoting aviation, even Chinese-American aviators, and that this did not occur in other communities. Portland saw these students as really these great heroes. Also, it has something to do with the fact that Portland was in competition with Seattle for being the center for aviation in the Northwest. And so Portland was throwing everything it had into aviation. It's just throughout that first quarter of the 20th century, the focus was really on flight here in Oregon. So that was also one of the kind of things that helped, made it a very fertile place for this story to spring up. I was really pleased with how the exhibit came together. What was exciting for me was at the opening reception, when a man came to it and he grabbed my arm and went over and looked at this photo. His uncle was in the photo and he had never seen the photo before. So this means something to a local community, but also it sheds some light on what has really been an ignored and basically forgotten piece of Chinese American history. What I would really like to see happen is that a documentary be made about this. Mm-hmm. I think it would be ideal. And there are still people that are alive that remember. And so we need to take advantage of that now.
Anne Wetherill, thank you for talking with us today and bringing this little-known thread of Chinese-American history to our attention.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Anne Wetherill is the co-curator of the exhibit Flying Tigers, Chinese-American Aviators in Oregon, 1918 to 1945. I'm Andrew Ye, and you've been listening to APA Compass.
Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. You are listening to APA Compass. I'm Sari Gametta, and I'm here with Andrew Ye, and we are in spring membership drive mode.
Yeah, welcome to APA Compass this morning. Welcome to KBOO this morning.
We are in spring membership drive mode. Andrew's been working very hard running around trying to make things happen, which is why he's a little bit out of breath, and that's all good.
Yeah, we're a little bit behind on our fundraising goal today by about 15%. The drive ends tomorrow, that's Saturday, and we'd love for you to join in right now to help us reach our goal.
That's right, and we have lots of love to give, so we're just asking you to join us and listen and become a member.
The phone number is 877-500-5266, or else you can donate online at kboo.fm.
And here's the thing with donating. You could be like, you can help us reach our goal for this hour, which is $500. Make it happen. Let's do that. So again, you can call 877-500-5266, or you can go online, kboo.fm, and go to the upper right-hand corner and click on the tip jar.
Now, every day of our spring membership drive, you have the chance to win a print of a historic KBOO poster suitable for framing. You can see today's poster online at our website, kboo.fm. You can also become a member on our website if you're there.
And you can also call us, as we've mentioned, 877-500-5266. KBOO is a community resource, and you know, nothing happens in a vacuum. We need to support each other. So we're just asking you to help support us. We have all of these amazing podcasts online for free, downloadable for free. And we're just asking you to help keep us, you know, keep it going, because KBOO is amazing and we really want your support. And we know that you're all big fans out there. So just do it. Just call us at 877-500-5266.
Yeah, so please listen to us, our program, join us, vote with, you know, vote for KBOO, be a stakeholder in KBOO. The outcome of, you know, the outcome of this show is really depends on you. We're 100% listener supported. So please join us at kboo.fm or 877-500-5266.
Okay, back to APA Compass.
She also was from Portland. She was one of two women that trained at this Swan Island Flight School. And then she went off to China to try to serve in the Chinese military, but they turned her down because she was a woman. So she stayed in Canton and in Hong Kong and flew commercially. Once World War II broke out between the U.S. or the U.S. enters the war, she became a buyer for the Chinese military and came back to New York. She joined the WASPs, the Women's Air Service Pilots, and was the first Chinese American woman to fly for the U.S. military in that way. And she was also the last WASP to die. She was killed in a collision flying transport for actually some of the really big planes, some of the fighter jets.
What's Leah Hing's story?
Leah Hing, she is a very colorful character. I'm sorry I never met her because she was alive until 2005, I believe. She was from the Portland area. She was recruited by a man named Tex Rankin. He wanted to create a flying circus. He had a African-American flyer. He had a Native American pilot. He had a white pilot. These are all women. And then Leah Hing, who was the Chinese pilot. The flying circus, I don't think, ever really took off. But she had her own plane. The plane is now in the collection of the Pearson Airfield in Vancouver, Washington. And so you can go see this biplane. She served as an instrument mechanic or an airplane engineering specialist in Portland during the Second World War. And after that, she never flew again.
The cultural climate was pretty tough, I think, for Chinese Americans at the
time,
right? Yes, it
was. It was.
And so what sort of obstacles did they have to overcome to actually become aviators? Were there maybe personality traits?
For the Chinese American pilots from the Portland area that went to the flight school, they had to be bold and determined. Alan Greenwood, who was the instructor, was interviewed in the paper multiple times about these students, and he talked about them as being the most mentally tough and the best pilots he'd ever trained. And they were really heralded as heroes. end in going to China, I'm sure that they were treated as heroes there as well. People like Arthur Chin, that name is still well known, and both in Taiwan, and then he was inducted into the U.S. Hall of Fame.
What did you expect when you first envisioned this project, and how did it actually turn out?
I wasn't really sure how I was going to envision the project. It was much richer than I thought it would turn out. But one of the questions that I kept coming back to in reading about the Chinese that were involved, knowing that there were other Chinese communities around that also were involved in aviation, and I kept coming back to, why Portland? Why would this have happened here? I was really struck by the fact that Portland was so interested in promoting aviation, even Chinese-American aviators, and this did not occur in other communities. Portland saw these students as really these great heroes. Also, it has something to do with the fact that Portland was in competition with Seattle for being the center for aviation in the Northwest. And so Portland was throwing everything it had into aviation. It's just throughout that first quarter of the 20th century, the focus was really on flight here in Oregon. So that was also one of the kind of things that helped made it a very fertile place for this story to spring up. I was really pleased with how the exhibit came together. What was exciting for me was at the opening reception when a man came to it and he grabbed my arm and went over and looked at this photo. His uncle was in the photo and he had never seen the photo before. So this means something to a local community, but also it sheds some light on what has really been an ignored and basically forgotten piece of Chinese American history. What I would really like to see happen is that a documentary be made about this. Mm-hmm. I think it would be ideal. And there are still people that are alive that remember. And so we need to take advantage of that now.
Ann Weatherill, thank you for talking with us today and bringing this little-known thread of Chinese-American history to our attention.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Ann Weatherill is the co-curator of the exhibit Flying Tigers, Chinese-American Aviators in Oregon, 1918 to 1945. I'm Andrew Ye, and you've been listening to APA Compass.
Hello. Hello, and thank you for listening to KBOO. We're in the middle of our membership drive hour right now.
I'm Sari Gametha, and I'm here with Andrew Ye, and you're listening to a broadcast of APA Compass this morning. And we appreciate you tuning in and listening and supporting your community radio. So as we said, we're in the middle of our spring membership drive, and we're about 15%, we're behind on our fundraising goal by about 15%, and this drive ends tomorrow, Saturday. So we'd love for you to join right now to help us reach our goal.
Our goal right now is $500.
For the hour.
And so if you can call in and support us, we'd be so happy. And please call in because you're enjoying the program. Your membership is vital to protecting this program on KBOO. Protect it with your support.
That's right. You were just listening to a segment done by Andrew, which was about Chinese American aviators from 1918 to 1945. And, you know, this is rare content that you're only going to hear right here on KBOO. We know that you value this content because you're listening to us right now. So we provide these podcasts for you free of charge. We're happy to do that, but we do need to stay on the air. So please do help us. Please donate. Please become a member right away. You can do so by calling 877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm.
And if you've been listening to KBOO for a long time, now's the time for you to step forward and be counted as a member. And you know, if you've just been meaning to call for a long time, just waiting for the right time, please do so now.
Yeah, just do it right now.
And so we're also really proud of the fact that there are many, many listeners who have made the decision to become members of KBOO. So if you want to join that special family, you know, call 877-500-5266 and please join our KBOO family.
That's right. While we have your ears, we would like to take this moment to thank our food donors who have been nourishing the volunteers. We have Gravy, which is located at 5957 North Mississippi Avenue. We have Tapalaya, which is located at 28 Northeast 28th Avenue. and Hot Lips Pizza at located at 2211 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard. Thank you for nourishing our volunteers. Rock on.
So again, our goal for the hour is $500. If you'd call in for this hour, we would very much appreciate it. 877-500-5266. If you're enjoying this program please call in right now.
That's right. You can become a member for $20 a year. That is only 38 cents a week or 6 cents a day. Because, you know, we realize that asking for this big chunk of money, like, you know, $100 straight up, that's, I understand that that's asking a bit much. But if it's a yearly sustainable donation, that means $1.89 per week or 27 cents a day. So you have many different options. Call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm and click in the tip jar in the upper right-hand corner, because I know many of you, like myself, find yourself at a computer for many hours of the day.
And so there's also there's also thank you gifts. If you call in for $120 donation, you can get a Democracy Now! T-shirt. It's a black shirt with a red and white Democracy Now! Logo on the front with the web URL on the back. These gifts are also available online, or if you call in, there's also...
But you want to call in. That's right. That's what we're talking about.
Hey, somebody heard you, Sarika. There's also a KBOO 4 gig audio flash drive. It'll come preloaded with exclusive KBOO content. Includes recorded talks by Rolf Nader, by Helen Caldicott, Winona LaDuc, Noam Chomsky, Derek Jensen, Joshua Four, Amy Goodman of Democracy Now!, there's also audio from numerous other KBOO hosted specials, including the Occupy Portland special that we did, and also much more, including content never broadcast before on the radio. It's all inside of our branded KBOO 4 gigabyte audio flash drive for $120 minimum donation.
That's right, and the way you can do that is by calling 877-500-5266. Again, 877-500-5266. Or go online. You can sneak it in at work. You can do it. It's okay. KBOO.fm. Go to the upper right-hand corner and click on the tip jar. And these gifts can be yours today. That flash drive that Andrew was talking about for $120 minimum donation, which you can do sustainably, that would take you at $2.31 a week or 33 cents a day.
So please join our KBOO family. We invite you to do that. We're in this together. You know, we can't do this without you. So call 877-500-5266 or go online at kboo.fm to donate with us.
Again, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. And we're going to return back to APA Compass. You've just been listening to a song called Matajan by Ghazal singer Kiran Aluwalia. Good morning, and thanks for listening to APA Compass on KBOO. I'm Sarika Mehta, and today I have a special guest for our annual music show, the two-time Juno Award-winning Kiran Aluwalia. Kiran was born in India, raised in Toronto, and has been residing in New York City for the past 7 years. Her latest album, Am Samin Common Ground, won her second Juno Award for Best World Music Album in 2011. I met up with Kiran at her home in New York City. Welcome to the show, Kiran.
Thank you, Sarika. Thanks for having me. Great seeing you after, like, pretty much a decade, maybe less.
To start with, tell us about your musical background and how you became interested in ghazal specifically.
I became interested in ghazal because my parents are both ghazal singers, and so at a very, very young age, when I was growing up in India, they would both sing ghazals, and so that's how ghazals entered my life. And my own musical background is that I started learning, first I started learning Sikh spiritual songs called Shabad Kirtan. My parents taught me those in India, and then I started learning Indian music, Indian classical music, and other types of music in India. And then when we moved to Canada, I was still a child, but my parents found an Indian music teacher in Toronto for me. And I continued learning Indian music in Canada part-time. So I would go to school in the daytime, just like other kids. And then after school, I would learn my Indian music. And then after I finished my university degree, that's when I went back to India as an adult to study music full-time. And so for over 10 years, I would hop back and forth between India and Toronto. I would stay in India for a year and a half doing music. I'd come back to Toronto for 6 months, back and forth for over a decade. And then in 2000, I released my first CD, Kashish Attraction. Right now, I have my latest CD is my fifth CD.
That's the exciting award-winning one, which we'll talk about in a moment. I was curious, at what age did you begin learning music?
I would say my formal studies in Indian music started at the age of, I think it was five, I must have been, five or six.
What did you study in college for your degree?
In university in Toronto, my first degree was in international relations. Then I went to India to do music in between there. And then when I came back, then I also got an MBA in finance.
That leads me to my next question, which I think you had a career in finance. And at some point along the way, you obviously changed to a full-time musician. So tell us about that process and that life choice that you made.
Well, music had always been a very strong part of my life. But in my 20s, I didn't think that I would be able to make a living of doing Indian music while living in a place like Canada. And so I always had this thing where I have to pursue a 9-to-5 job that I'm actually going to be able to earn some money with. And that's how I ended up in bond trading. And I just hated it. I didn't like it at all. I was completely unsatisfied with it. And so I left it after a very short time, 6 months. What happened when I left it is that a few dancers in Canada found out that, Kieran's not working these days. And then I got hired to do a national dance tour about a month long in Canada. And then I kept getting hired by other people. So the beginning of my career started by other people hiring me, Indian dancers. There was an Indian Western violinist who asked me to compose some lyrics of Indian spiritual songs. And then eventually along the way, I started my own group and composed my own music for myself that I wanted, created a group and cut a record, made a CD and got going.
Did you feel any kind of internal struggles with making that decision?
Yeah, I had a lot of internal struggles. Even before the fact of moving into music as a career, I remember when I was going to India to learn music full-time for the very first time of my life. I was going to be in India for over a year. I made this decision. I knew it was the right thing to do. But the night before I was leaving, I wasn't able to sleep at all that night because I thought, oh, my God, what am I doing? I'm gonna land up in Bombay, and I don't know anybody in Bombay. What am I doing? And this was before the Internet, and this was before cell phones. This was 1990. And I literally was going to be very isolated from my friends and my family. But there was something inside me that, going back to your question, there was an internal struggle about leaving a very clear career path to choose a very uncertain career path. And that was scary, that decision. But what was even scarier was to see what would happen if I were to choose the very clear career path. I could stand there and I could see myself working up the corporate ladder, getting a better job and more money, getting a house in the suburbs. I could see the color of the carpet, the rosy, shaggy carpet. You know, I have a dog, married life, family and everything. And right then there, when I was 19 years old, that scared the hell out of me. And that scared me much more than an uncertain career path. So everything was pretty scary when you're young, you know, because the future is scary at that point.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. I'm Sari Kametha, and I'm speaking with ghazal singer and 2011 Juno Award winner Kiran Ahluwalia at her home in New York City. Back to your music, what exactly is a ghazal and how does this differ from other forms of classical Indian music?
Well, ghazal isn't a classical Indian music. Ghazal is somewhere in the middle of the spectrum between Indian pop and Indian classical. A ghazal music, it starts off with poetry. So a ghazal poetry can be recited even without music. There's a tradition and a practice even now of ghazal recitations. And I go to them where poets are just reciting ghazals. And I go to them to look for material to compose music to. And so ghazal poetry is mostly about unrequited passion. And I'm careful to choose the word passion and not love, because even though in the world of ghazal poetry there are two characters, there's a lover and a beloved, and the lover is continually chasing a beloved, and the lover is willing to do larger than life things for the beloved, is willing to give up sanity for the beloved, and the beloved is going to be perpetually, eternally unavailable. That's the world of the ghazal. But the reason why I say it's about unrequited passion is because it's written in that sense about a man and a woman or a woman and a man, but it can be about carnal love. It can be also about spiritual love. The beloved can be God who is eternally unavailable. Or it can be about any other passion. It could be about a language. There's a ghazal about the Urdu language, that it escapes the poet continually. Faiz Ahmed Faiz, one of the leading poets of Pakistan, wrote a lot about communism. In his ghazals, the rivals are not the people who are also chasing the beloved, but the state. And so in that way, the thing that you're chasing can be a human being or any other passion that seems to escape you, and you're just willing to die a very slow death for it.
When you're choosing these poems for your repertoire, which themes do you tend to choose?
I choose a lot of themes, and mainly because it doesn't matter to me so much what the poet was intending to write about. One of my favorite poets lives in Toronto, Rashid Nadeem, and I have composed many of his lyrics, his ghazal poems, and he writes in the Sufi mystic vein. So his ghazals are about God. But when I compose, my inspiration is carnal love. For me, when I read the poetry, it speaks to me as a woman speaking to a man whom she desires so full-heartedly, and for whatever reasons it's unavailable. She's, you know, it's right there. It's like the glass is right there, and yet she's unable to pick up the glass, and that's what inspires me to compose.
So thanks so much for listening to APA Compass and on KBOO, KBOO FM this morning. We're in the middle of our spring membership drive. The phone number to donate is 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm, kboo.fm.
That's right. We are in the middle of our APA Compass broadcast. I'm Sarika Mehta, and I'm here with Andrew Ye. And before we run out of time, I would like to take this time to thank RJ from San Francisco for becoming a new member of KBOO. Yay, RJ! Thank you so much. You are listening to, we're in the middle of an interview with Kiran Ahluwalia, who is a ghazal singer. She was born in India, raised in Canada, and based out of New York. I had the pleasure of interviewing her a couple of times now, and she has been kind enough to donate her brand new CD, which is called Am Samin, Common Ground, for a $60 donation. For $60, you could have her amazing music and know so many of her stories through this amazing music. So you can do that by calling 877-500-5266 or going online, kboo.fm, and clicking on the tip jar in the upper right-hand corner.
So, yeah, we invite you to join the KBOO family. We're in this together. You know, people tell us that they listen to our program, you know, because the music is, you know, it's intelligent, the shows are fascinating, it's alternative, it's relaxing, and there's a, you know, a chance to escape from the bubblegum pop culture and, you know, maybe just take a break from the world. So, I mean, if any of that appeals to you, we expect you we would really, really appreciate you that if you can join us today, you pick that phone and call us 877-500-5266.
That's right. And more on the, speaking of Kiran Aluwalia, whose interview we'll return to in just in a bit, she's coming to Portland on April 24th, and you can go to her concert. You can get those tickets if you call right now, 877-500-5266. For a $60 donation, you can get tickets to her concert and experience live in concert in Portland, her debut performance here. So support APA Compass, support KBOO Community Radio. Call right now, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm. Go to the upper right-hand corner and click on the tip jar.
Now, another thank you gift that you can get is the for $90 minimum donation is that shirt, which is only available for the 2013 Spring Drive. You know, it's virtually guaranteed to ignite a conversation. It's KBOO's most provocative tongue-in-cheek shirt ever. We've taken a whole bunch of stereotypes that have been thrown at KBOO over the years. You know, people have emailed us or telephoned us and told us all these things. We put them all on a twisting, sarcastic shirt, which people will ask you about when you wear it. It's definitely a conversation starter, and you don't want to miss your chance to wear that shirt for a $90 minimum donation. That's 877-500-5266. And now back to APA Compass.
A lot of collaboration with different kinds of artists, you know, from the Malian Blues Tuareg group to Narwin and the Cape Breton fiddler Natalie McMaster, your husband Reza Bassi, who's a jazz guitarist, a number of other forms. So how does that play into how you, your process and how you compose your music?
You're actually quite right. The ghazal form doesn't lend itself easily to collaboration without sounding cheesy to people who know what a ghazal should be. I mean, for people who don't know what it should be, you know, anything's going to sound okay. So in certain instances, it does work. Like when I went to, for my CD Wanderlust, I collaborated with Portuguese fado instrumentalists. And to me, fado music, Portugal's fado music, is the ghazal of Portugal. So in that sense, it worked quite easily. And when I say easily, I still had to do all my homework, you know, compose in a way that would work with it. I was able to do my homework, you know, find ghazals that would work with Portuguese musicians. Went over to Portugal, spent a week with them, and then recorded and came back with this beautiful, beautiful recording. With the Malian Tuareg musicians from the Sahara Desert, while I was in my homework phase of trying to compose, it was very, very hard for me to find existing ghazal repertoire that I can compose music to in a way that's going to include the Malian blues guitars and percussion. So in that instance, although I did find a couple of poems that I composed, I was pushed to write my own lyrics. And I wrote my own lyrics not because, you know, I had a desire to be a poet, but I had a musical vision. So I heard something, I wanted it to be a certain way. I wasn't finding existing ghazal poetry, and so I just had to write my own lyrics that would be the vehicle for the music to happen. Your latest album, Am Samin Common Ground, which won your second Juno for Best World Music Album. How does this album differ from your previous ones? This album is a collaboration with Tuareg artists from the Sahara Desert in Mali, Africa. Two groups, Tenariwan and Terekaft. It's the first album where I've written even the lyrics, not just the music, but the lyrics to a lot of the songs. There is one cover tune, and that's Must. It's a cover of the famous Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan Sufi Qawwali. With my previous CDs, I would say I'm singing ghazal and Punjabi folk song, not traditional ghazal, but contemporary ghazal. But with the CD, I think I have to, if I want to describe it more accurately, it's really Indian contemporary song. And the songs are influenced on ghazals. A few of them are ghazals, but not all of them are ghazals.
And what was the inspiration behind the collaboration with Tenariwan for the cover of Must, and how did you develop that?
I chose to do Must with Tenariwan because I thought it would be really interesting to take a classic Muslim qawwali from Pakistan and have it reinterpreted myself with Muslims from Africa. That would just be neat. And then musically, in Pakistan, traditionally, Qawwali music is done with acoustic instruments. I mean, it can be remixed, but it's recorded with acoustic instruments, tabla and harmonium, and I wanted to record it. Musically, I just thought that this specific style of blues electric guitar and this specific style of percussion is going to lend itself very well to this classic. And the fact that it is a classic, it's such a joyous song. I wanted to sing it. I wanted to, you know, dance to it. And yet, I wanted to also do something different to it. Why should people listen to my Must Must when a good version has been done by Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan? So I thought I would be able to bring something completely fresh to the song in this way by doing a collaboration of it with this kind of electric guitar. And then beyond that, just technically speaking, there were a lot of similarities between Qawwali and Tuareg music, which is why I chose to do not a ghazal but a Qawwali type of poem with them, because there's Qawwali has hand claps and the Tuaregs have a lot of hand claps. Then Qawwali has the call and response system within the song, and the Tuaregs have the call and response system where the main singer is singing something and the rest of the group is falling behind. So I thought this would, that the format and the structure would also lend itself quite easily to what they do.
For this album, for Am Samin, you've won your second Juno for the best world music album, and your first Juno was in 2004 for Beyond Boundaries, also for Best World Music Albums. First of all, many, many congratulations to
you. Thank you.
And what was your experience like to receive this news and to accept this award?
It was great. I like receiving awards. Makes the party a lot funner. Yeah, and it's always a great feeling to be recognized.
Are you working on any new projects?
Yep, always working on new projects. So I started composing a while back for the new CD, and we'll be touring with the current repertoire of Am Zameen, and we'll be putting in a couple of new songs in my tours. Yeah.
Kiran, thank you so much for chatting with me on APA Compass, and I wish you many congratulations on your new album and your Juno Award.
Thank you, Sadika. Thanks for taking the time for me.
I've been speaking with contemporary ghazal singer and Punjabi folk artist Kiran Ahluwalia. Her 2011 album, Am Samin, Common Ground, won the Juno Award for Best World Music Album. You can learn more about Kiran at her website, kiranmusic.com. I'm Sarika Mehta, and you're listening to APA Compass on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland.
Thanks for listening to APA Compass this morning and listening to KBOO. My name is Andrew Ye. I'm here with Sarika Mehta, and we're here for our spring fundraising drive at KBOO. The phone number to call is 877-500-5266, or you can go on the internet at kboo.fm. You've just been listening to a great program.
A fabulous interview, if I do say so myself, Andrew. You were just listening to an interview with Kiran Ahluwalia, a ghazal singer who is based out of New York. I had the pleasure of interviewing her a couple of times, and we rebroadcast it this time because she is coming to Portland, and she supports KBOO Community Radio. So for a $60 donation, you can either get tickets to her concert, which is April 24th at the Alberta Rose Theater, or you can get a copy of the CD of the music you just heard. And she's an amazing, amazing musician and a wonderful person who is thrilled to be a part of KBOO, just as you are all thrilled to be a part of KBOO. So call 877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm, and click on the tip jar.
So your membership is vital for keeping this program on KBOO. Protect it with your support. You know, because you're enjoying this program, please call in right now. We've had some really great stories on APA Compass over the last several years. I mean, we've had Jose Antonio Vargas on here, who's the Pulitzer Prize winner and the Define American founder. We've had Amy Chua, who's the famous Tiger Mom.
Right, she's famous.
We've had some of our some great Asian American artists as well. Harry Kondabalu, the comedian and activist from Seattle, has been on our program. Sarika interviewed him.
And yeah, and we've also had local people. We support people in right here in Portland, with such as the multiculturalism symposium that occurs every year at Lewis and Clark University. They finish out their whole program with what is called the Race Monologues, and those are very brave and articulate and amazing students, and they contributed their sort of their race monologues, which could, you know, are kind of like angry APA minutes, to our show. So we were lucky enough to have those students on our show.
And Sarika also mentioned we have a regular feature called an angry APA minute, where listeners like you can sound off and, you know, talk about things that bother you, things that happen to you. So Sarika, Sarika Mehta gave us an angry APA minute a few months ago called My Ambiguous Ethnicity. We have one coming up later on today on this show by Linda Uweki Absher called HAPA for Hire. We also have other regular regular segments called APA Pop Watch, where we talk about things that are going on with APAs in the media, because there are very many stereotypes of Asian Pacific Islander Americans in the media, which when we see something that's off, we feel a need to call it out.
We challenge what you see and hear out there. So call 877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm, and click on the tip jar. Support our program. Support your community radio. This is a huge community resource. There is so much that happens here, just in terms of training and how to learn to do media effectively, ethically. Like I said, challenging stereotypes that we see out there, getting voices that are traditionally marginalized. We get these voices on the air, and we get the information out there. And you love us. We know you do, because you're listening. So you should donate. You should call 877-500-5266 or go to kboo.fm.
Now, APA Compass was founded 7 years ago, in 2006, on KBOO-FM. And without the station, without the support, this program would never have come to be. Now, because you've been listening to KBOO for a long time, you've been listening to APA Compass for a long time, now is the time for you to step forward and be counted as a member. We know you've been meaning to call. Try to make that time now. The phone number again is 877-500-5266.
That's right. Let's hear those phones ringing. Join the KBOO family. We're all, we're all in this together. We are actually a little bit behind on our fundraising goal for the entire drive by about 15%. And the drive ends tomorrow on Saturday. So join us right now. We want to meet our goal of $500 for the hour. So just help take us over the edge. Come on. Call 877-500-5266 or go online, kboo.fm, and click on the tip jar. Can do it. Do it. Come on.
Yeah. So next up on APA Compass, we have Linda Uweki Absher's AAP, Angry APA Minute, HAPA for Hire.
This is Linda Uweki Absher, and this is my Angry APA Minute. One of the joys of being mixed race is that for a lot of people, my face is an open invitation to approach and start playing the "What are you?" game. Doesn't matter if I'm waiting for a bus, standing in line for a Daniel Craig movie, or just staring longingly at the Thai, lime, and chili cashews at Trader Joe's. There's something about my visage that's irresistible when it comes to trying to tag me minority-wise. And it's even better when I decide to fess up, since I usually don't fit the ethnicity they've selected for me. No, you don't look it. Or my all-time favorite. That's not it. So after decades of being an ethnic Rorschach test to strangers, I began wondering, why not make my looks work for me? Heck, I'm ambiguous enough to look like I was born in a kimono, a flamingo dress, or a burqa. Why not hire myself out to folks who need that little touch of diversity? I've even come up with the ad. Cocktail parties looking a little too bland? Tired of friends and coworkers implying you just aren't diverse enough? Or do you just want a person of color friend without having to deal with the time and the liberal guilt involved? Why not hire an ethnically ambiguous white collar professional? In other words, why not hire me? Yes, now you can hire your own minority professional for those situations when having a sea of Caucasians just won't do. As a mixed-race librarian with a questionable ethnic appearance, I can meet most of your minority needs without looking too multi-culti, thus avoiding the risk of scaring off administrators, neighbors, or that cute person that keeps staring at their phone at Starbucks. For a modest hourly rate, I am available for standing behind you during those pesky press conferences where you address why your institution is woefully lacking in some issue that is of concern to minorities and the national media. Nodding in sympathy is extra. Publicity photo shoots in which I stare intently at any object representing your business or organization, such as computer screens, recycling bins, Nobel Prize-winning professors, etc. Showing up at your presentation's Q&A session to ask a question that really is a pat on the back for your diversity efforts. Fundraising events in which I stand by your sushi or Mexican hors d'oeuvres table and pronounce individual dishes with the appropriate accent whenever a potential donor is within hearing distance. Community services, where you need someone on your team who looks just like the people you're helping while the television cameras roll. But why limit yourself to professional events? Why not hire me for those social situations when having a minority BFF is an advantage? For the same nominal fee, I will join your friends or family at the ethnic restaurant of choice and loudly announce it's the only place in town where the food is, quote, just like home. Note, you pay for the meal, including all the alcohol I drink to get through the event. Make you feel less of an interloper or provide cultural street cred by accompanying you to any desired ethnic event. Obon festivals, Cinco de Mayo parties, powwows, you name it. Attend dinner parties where I kill time for guests who are waiting for you to thaw out those mini quiches by letting them play What's Your Ethnicity? Each guest is allowed two questions before I announce my background and dinner is served. I'll also don the uniform of your choice while friends are chatting at your home. Impress them by having me wandering about in a housekeeper, gardener, or nail technician outfit. I'm also available for those personal requests, ones where an exotic touch is needed for the attention you seek. For a one-time fee, I'll provide a photo for your online dating profile. Warning, a significant surcharge will be assessed for Craigslist and OkCupid profiles. Now the disclaimers. Any event requiring me to lift more than 20 pounds or use a power tool is extra. No actual housework, gardening, or nail buffing provided. Eye rolling permitted whenever a colleague, guest, or potential date scoffs at my perceived lack of ethnicity. Chopstick in hair and/or nondescript Asian accent extra. No actual dating provided. This is Linda Uekiabsher, and this is my Angry APA Minute.
Thanks for listening to our spring membership drive special of APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program here on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. We'd like to thank our guests, Linda Uekiabsher, Anne Weatherall, and Kieran Aluwalia. APA Compass airs the first Friday of every month at 9 a.m. on KBOO and is collectively produced by Andrew Ye, Kishlani D'Souza, and myself, Sarika Mehta. You can download this and other segments at kboo.fm/APA Compass. If you'd like to leave us a message, find us on Facebook at APA Compass Radio or Twitter at APA Compass. Check out our new website at apacompass.wordpress.com. I'm Sarika Mehta. Thanks for listening.
All right, thanks again for listening to APA Compass and KBOO FM. Now, you know, if there's one sure way you can send a signal to the radio station that you like this program, APA Compass, and if you want them to continue running programs like this, like APA Compass or other programs similar to it, that is call right now. Not now, not later, not an hour, but call right now, because this is the sure way you can show the station that you support things like APA Compass.
This is the time, 877-500-5266, or go online, kboo.fm. At this moment, while I have your ears, I do want to take the time to thank a couple of folks who did renew their membership. We have Richard from Southeast Portland who renewed his membership, and Maxine and Ned from Southeast Portland as well. Thank you all so much for renewing your membership. And doesn't that inspire the rest of you to also either join for the first time or renew your memberships? Because KBOO is a family and we are all a part of this. We are all a part of this amazing community resource. And, you know, nothing happens on its own. Nothing really, you know, just come on, let's do it. Let's call 877-500-5266. You have just spent the last hour listening to APA Compass. Andrew and I are both members of this collective where we challenge the stereotypes of Asian Pacific Americans that you see and hear on the corporate stations every day. For example, Linda Uecki Absher's Angry APA Minute. That was a fine example of bringing a voice to the air and showing you a different perspective, an important perspective of what happens when we are marginalized, what happens when people assume things and stereotype us, and then we like to, you know, get back at it a little bit. But so support our program, keep us on the air, support KBOO, 877-500-5266. Listen, join, and vote, and be a part of this community resource.
The other program that we had on in today's show were like Han Wetherill. The Flying Tigers exhibit is something that's very unique to Portland. I mean, these are Chinese American aviators. There's a Chinese American. There's a flight school that was in Portland early on in the country, and Portland was one of the ones that actually had classes of Chinese Americans that were trained to be pilots. And this is a very unusual story, something that didn't happen in any other country. Portland was the first place that this happened.
That's right. And it's possible you didn't know that, or if you did, how often do you get to hear that on the radio? Almost never. So support our programming, support the fact that we have podcasts of all of our segments online for free, and we would love for you to just contribute and support us. 877-500-5266. As I mentioned earlier, we had an interview with Kiran Aluwalia, a rebroadcast from our summer music show. She will be in Portland later this month, and for $60, you can have her CD. For a $60 donation right now, you can have a copy of her CD, Am Samin, Common Ground, which also won a Juno Award, or you can get tickets to her concert that is at the Alberta Rose Theater on April 24th.
So also, we have other thank you gifts that are available. There's for a $100 minimum donation, you can have a copy of the 2013 Portland Chinook book. This is the print version. There's hundreds of coupons to local businesses worth thousands of dollars there. Categories include grocery, dining, entertainment, travel, garden, and home improvement. Just call now at 877-500-5266. This is also the way, you know, you can join our family. You can help support programs like APA Compass. So please call now, 877-500-5266.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, where the time is approximately 10:01 a.m. Coming up is Flashpoints. Air Cascadia is off today. Guests on Flashpoints includes Dr. Francis Boyle on Korea and international law. At 11 on the Radio Zine, host Michelle Schroeder-Fletcher speaks with Sam Pizzigatti about his book, The Rich Don't Always Win, The Forgotten Triumph Over Plutocracy That Created the American Middle Class, 1900 to 1970. Keep it locked right here, KBOO 90.7 FM Portland.
I beg your pardon.
After 12 years of marriage, my husband went to prison. Listen how we kept our love alive on Prison Pipeline on April 8th.
The key to keeping our love alive was communication, right, Sharon?
When did that happen, honey?
Oh, weren't we communicating on a regular basis?
Is that what you call it?
And the communication continues. I guess you'll just have to listen to Prison Pipeline to hear the rest of the story. That's Prison Pipeline, April 8th at 6:30 p.m.
I beg your pardon. Never promised you a rose garden.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot silent mobile dance parties?
Silent dance? Doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silentdanceparties.
Flashpoints, we continue our drumbeat reporting on the worsening situation on the Korean Peninsula. And we'll hear a plea from the executive director of the National Lawyers Guild to free jailed defense attorney Lynn Stewart. I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. I'm Dennis Bernstein. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We continue our drumbeat coverage of the worsening situation around the Korean Peninsula. The saber rattling on both sides is at a pitched level now. The U.S. is flying in more forces. The wide-ranging military exercises with South Korea are continuing, and there seems to be no turning back. Joining us to talk more about this is Hoon Lee. She is a member of the Working Group on Peace and Demilitarization in Asia and the Pacific, as well as the National Campaign to End the Korean War. And she joins us from New York City. It is good to have you with us.
Hi, good evening.
Why don't you give us your best shot in terms of the latest, in terms of what's happening and how dangerous you think it is at this point?
Well, first, let me say, as a Korean-American with people I care about on both sides of the DMZ in North and South Korea, the situation right now is very alarming. I know that there are some in Washington circles who are trying to downplay the seriousness of the situation, saying this is very typical of what we have seen in the past. I don't think it's wise for us to ignore the seriousness of the situation. I think what concerns me the most in terms of the most recent development is an agreement that was signed between South Korea and the United States last Friday. It's called a Local Provocation Counter Operations Plan. And what this agreement does is if in the event there is an outbreak